Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told you that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly's. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I'm
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. Get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
All right. Well, today we're supposed to be doing a movie review of Black Gestapo. So if you guys, any of you followed the assignment, we gave it out on Wednesday. We reminded you yesterday. And I watched it last night in its entirety, Black Gestapo, which was released in 1975. I guess it, the genre of film it would be under, I would, black exploitation film. So if you happen to watch it, 619-768-2945, and what are your thoughts on it? The other topic I have, which we'll probably move to another day, is real life mathematics. Remember those word problems, math problems you would get in third, fourth, fifth grade, somewhere around there? Well, let's talk about those as applied to your daily life now. And then what's been trending since, from what I heard yesterday afternoon, I wasn't aware of it until late last night, Kevin Samuels allegedly, depends on who you talk to, allegedly passed away yesterday. So it's, they have about at least four or five, maybe six rooms in Clubhouse going on right now. And some are answering, some don't know. Maybe one says he is. But overall, it's a lot of allegedlys on that. Some people have confirmed it. I just came off of TMZ's website. They don't mention anything about it at all. USA Today doesn't have anything trending. But Kevin Samuels was more like a Black Manosphere type person. So that wouldn't be trending mainstream anyway. In any event, let's start off with, so like I said, if you want to chime in on whatever happened to Kevin Samuels, 619-768-2945. Now, let's, the homework assignment for last night, which was given out Wednesday, was to watch the film Black Gestapo, which I believe that's a black exploitation. It came out during the black exploitation era. And I watched it in its entirety last night. And let me, there's a Wikipedia page on it. So I'm gonna read what's on Wikipedia, and then we'll get to, you know, what are your thoughts on it? All right, Black Gestapo. And the reason why I'm reading Wikipedia is the director and the who was produced by, and I guess bankrolled by too. Plays a, well, I have an opinion on all that, but let's see. Black Gestapo, an American film released about a vigilante named General Ahmad, who starts an inner-city people's army to protect black citizens in Watts. And for those of you who don't know, Watts is a neighborhood in Los Angeles, California. However, when the army succeeds in chasing the mob out of town, Ahmed is replaced by his colleague, Colonel Koja, who reforms the movement into a National Socialist criminal organization in order to have complete control over the town. It was written and directed by Lee Frost, and Rod Perry. Charles P. Robinson, Phil Hoover, Ed Cross, and it features a cameo from Russ Meyer and regular Uki or Kai DeGrard. All right. It depicts African American men dressed as Nazis, and contains many scenes of violence, including a castration scene and softcore nudity. Let's see. All right, critical response to Black Gestapo. Writing an all-movie, critic Donald Goresco wrote that the film lives up to the offensive potential of its title by cramming every bit of nastiness it can muster into a short running time, and that although it was socially irresponsible at its best, it is even inspired in a very twisted sort of way, it says. Okay, well, so Black Gestapo, it is available for free on YouTube, and like I said, it was released in 1975. Okay, so let's go to the phone lines here. Brother Beasley, 410, you recommended it, so I watched it in its entirety last night.
Hotep,
good morning. Here's my... And it kept my attention. And here's where it caught my... This is why I watched it all the way through. Is there the scene where the black lady, the nurse, was, I guess, walking home. And there were two white, dirty cops, detectives, because they weren't in a, you know, the street cop gear. They were, you know, plain clothes. So they were following her and hassling her and that type of stuff, and she kept her composure until one put his hands on her, and then she slapped him, and then they started to beat her up, and then the black guys in uniform saw that. And now here's where I had to go look up who bankrolled this film. So then there were two white detectives that were beating up on this black woman, but the black guys who came over to help her outnumbered the two white guys. However, the two white guys beat up the black men. So I had to pause and say, hold it, who produced this? I went on and watched the rest of the film. But anyway, so Beasley, you recommended the film. Your thoughts on it?
Well, that goes to show you how effective propaganda is. When it first started off, those guys weren't cops. They're the cops. Those guys were mobsters.
Okay, and they were.
Yeah, and what happened is they were squeezing the black neighborhood. But now let's go back to the first beginning. They showed Hitler and the stormtroopers to start off to set the tone. Well, one thing, as the show progressed, then it showed the black guy making a speech that you had to do for self.
Right. He sure did. And on self-respect, you know, you got to respect yourself first. But you're right. He did make that speech.
Right. That was the movement. And the thing is, if you look at it, during that time, the Panthers, I guess it was on the downside because they had started, COINTELPRO had started squeezing the Black Panthers at the time and the Nation of Islam. You know, Malcolm X had been assassinated. And the thing is, Brother L.A., as the show progressed, you didn't see anything about the white mobsters shaking down the black neighborhood with drugs and numbers running and everything else. Then the black security force came in, and then they ran them out of town, and they were cited. Well, it was said that they were worse than the white guys.
Yeah, that's what it appears to me to be.
Well, that's what they said in the movie. Well, you know, they're pushing more dope, and they're worse than the monsters.
Right.
But at the beginning, it showed that the brother had good intentions as far as doing for self and trying to get people off drugs and everything. But like anything else, he didn't have any money to finance his programs. He was getting that from the mayor. And as it progressed, what happened is one of the colonels in the black security force said, well, look, you know, we got to protect ourselves and our women. And after the white guy raped the nurse, that's when they went in and castrated the guy and ran
I remember that scene, and they flushed him down the toilet.
Yeah, and he said, hey, look, if any of you punks put your hand on a black woman again, I'm going to flush you down the toilet like I flushed this stuff down the toilet, which I thought it was on a positive note. But then after it progressed, it showed how, and the message was, look, if you get rid of the white mobsters, then the black security force is just as bad as the white mobsters they ran out. So you might as well be content with white mobsters coming in and controlling everything. That's the gist of the movie I got. I mean,
I would agree, because I remember the scene where they're in the guy's store. The two white mobsters were in the guy's store, and they were asking for their whatever kind of payment, shakedown payment. And he said no, then they started to beat him, and then the black people came in, and then I guess I know he killed one of them, if not two of them. You know, the white mobsters. And then the guy said, from now on, you can pay whatever you were paying, you know, paying them to us.
Right.
So,
but
you were thinking.
But then
that,
again,
go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, but then again, as the nurse told the leader that started off saying you have to do for self, and he was for trying to improve the black neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is she said, well, you know, the black community is fed up with the security force and what they're doing. Well, a black neighborhood had enough nerve to go in and rebel against the black security force. If you notice, they bombed the hospital.
Right.
And that's when the nurse that he was in the bedroom with, you know, he was making love to her, and she said, well, look, the black community is fed up with what they're doing, but the black community never got fed up with the mobsters shaking everybody down and selling dope in the neighborhood. I noticed that.
That's true.
As to say, well, you know, hey, look, we're powerless against the white folk doing this to us. But when the black folks are doing it, hey, look, we can do something about it. Which that doesn't happen in real life, you know, but.
Right. Well, that's why I went back and looked at, tried to do research on who directed the movie and who produced the movie or bankrolled it.
Well, the guy doing the speech said, do for self, Rod Perry. That was him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice, the guy that was, that asked him, said, well, look, give me some men to create a community security force. He used to play on Night Court.
Okay, I thought his face looked familiar.
Yeah, the Crooked Colonel. You know, that was when
right.
He was just starting out, but. But the guy that was up there talking about you need to do for self and gain your self-respect was Rod Perry, the producer.
Okay.
Now,
let me ask you this. One of the things that was I'm thinking about, because this, well, it was a black exploitation movie back in the 1975. I guess you would rate some of those. Well, this film was like maybe a B film, possibly C.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I'm thinking if I was an actor, because, you know, that black roles back during that time era wasn't plentiful.
No.
It's really not over running over today, but it was less back then. I was thinking, man, would I take a role in that movie? That's one of the things I was thinking. But, if you're, you know, I guess they had responsibility. They wanted to practice their craft, so.
Well, Brother L.A., the people in entertainment is just like politicians.
Mm-hmm.
When you got a mortgage to pay or rent to pay.
Right.
You need to keep your water running and your lights is on.
You got to do what you got to do.
Hey, look, you know, people with the money can get you to do anything. You know,
right.
And what happened is that movie would have, and look, if you, well, I know you're too young to have been able to go to movies in 75, but what happened is if it was going to get any play in white theaters at all, they had to make that black security force look crooked and put them in the worst
right.
light as possible. That's why it started off with Hitler, and they call him the Black Gestapo. Well, the thing is, when you put Hitler up there at the beginning and say these guys are black Gestapos, evidently that puts the blacks in a negative light regardless of what they do. Because
right.
as bad as the whites
Oh, yeah, they
were
had
doing
them doing the Heil Hitler, had them dressed with the Nazi uniform on and all that.
That's right. That's right. So it was a message to both the black neighborhood and the white neighborhood. Hey, look, if you go with the Nation of Islam or you go with the Black Panthers, they're just as bad as Hitler. And
mm-hmm.
the thing is, folks, you got to be on guard against them. You got to do whatever it takes to put them out of operation. And blacks, you can't give loyalty to someone like that says they're coming in to protect your neighborhood and get dope out of your neighborhood.
Right.
And you notice at first they had a beret on and they had the uniforms on. Well, that was a direct link to the Black Panthers.
The Panthers, wasn't it? Right.
So with that being the case, that was propaganda at its best. Hey, look, as long as white folks is doing it, it's all right. As long as black folks are doing it to you, you're powerless. But if your black folks are doing it at that time, then what we can go in and we can do what we need to do to fight against them.
Right.
Because that was a thing I saw. And look, that was back then, but now we let anything go in our neighborhood, anything go. We don't come up with any type of resistance or any type of plan to safeguard our neighborhood or our women for that matter. But the thing is, it could have been scripted better to where those black guys could have been heroes. But
yeah.
when you have to distribute through a white theater, a network, and look, I'm quite sure those blacks couldn't bankroll all of it by themselves.
No.
They had to yield to certain requests from the people with the money.
Well, it was all, it is on one of Richard Pryor's albums. I don't know if it was on That Nigga's Crazy album, but one of those Richard Pryor albums, could have been on one. He was telling the joke where, they was in a prison setting, so they were going to do a play. And, you know what? I don't want to mess that up. I'm going to find a piece one day and play it on here. But the thing was Richard Pryor says, because the white guy that objected to the play, black folks putting on a play, when Richard Pryor said, well, the nigger dies, then the white person said, oh, well, okay, then you can go ahead and do it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. And Brother L.A., I sent you some links.
You know what? I couldn't open those things. I'm going to I tried to open them this morning when you sent them. See if
okay,
I can open
well,
them.
But just to give you an overview of what they was all about, I showed you there was one in there about the Nation of Islam being dope busters.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is they were going in these neighborhoods, and they were cleaning up the neighborhoods. I think, is it Mayfair Projects in D.C.?
Mayfair Projects, that's in between 14th Street and 13th Street. Yeah, I'm familiar with that neighborhood. And the building in particular, it's a big building.
Yeah, but I guess it's no longer there probably. But what
you
happened
know what,
is...
I haven't been, last time I've been to the... I didn't go to that part of D.C. last time I was over there, but... More than likely, matter of fact, more than likely that neighborhood's been gentrified because right around the corner from there, Latinos were all up in there. They've been there for a while now. And that neighborhood used to be all black.
Yeah, it did. Well, at the time that this article came out, his name was Cisneros. I can't think of his first name.
Oh,
he
Henry
was
Cisneros,
the,
he was... from San Antonio, he was the head of HUD at one time.
That's right. Well, what happened is the Nation of Islam had a security corporation.
Yeah, and I think they still have it.
Yeah, but what happened is they were getting government contracts to patrol the projects in these big cities. And what they found was when the Nation of Islam went in there, the shooting stopped, the drug dealing stopped, all types of violence stopped. The kids could come out and play and everything, and old people could go and do the shopping without being harassed or robbed.
Right.
And what happened is they cleaned the neighborhood up. And what happened is the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, Jewish Anti-Defamation League, had some problems with it. They say, hey, look, you know, you can't have these people in here with these security contracts, because they'll start proselytizing the members in those projects. Well, the thing is, let me skip to the conclusion here. The Nation of Islam cleaned those communities up. Stop the violence, stop the shooting, stop the drug dealing.
Right.
And people felt safe. The kids could go out and play. But, see, the Jews didn't want that. And other white folks didn't want it. And they stopped them. They canceled it. They took away their contracts. Mm. And I'm saying that, look, to make sure that everybody got the message, they found out Henry Cisneros had an outside affair, and they got him kicked out of the HUD secretary position. They smeared him.
Okay, that's how they did it.
Yeah, well, they smeared, after they had a congressional hearing. I watched that on C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is they had all of those Congress people up there, you know, talking about they were anti-Semitic and they hated blacks, whites, and all of this stuff. So they got them out, and just as soon as the Nation of Islam left, everything went back to normal. You know, as they say, you know, drug dealing, shooting, people scared to come out and everything else, which I'm saying this, they don't want peace in the black neighborhoods because it's bad for business. If they stop the dope dealing, you can imagine what happens to the overall drug smuggling operations that the CIA has and every other government organization has.
Well, I'm looking at that neighborhood. Ooh, I don't know how much you know about that, D.C., because that area, more than likely by now, has been gentrified.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it.
And that was a pretty nice-sized building that they had. And I know they cleaned up all the prostitution around there.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s and 90s. I know a lot of Latinos moved in that neighborhood. Next time I go to D.C., I got to go through there. But, yeah, I remember they cleaned that all up. That was a rough spot.
Yeah, I'm scheduled to go back up there on some business. But here's the deal. They had contracts in other cities, St. Louis, Chicago, and some other projects. And everywhere that they went, the black folks that lived in those projects testified to the Senate. They said, look, before the Nation of Islam come in here, hey, look, we couldn't even walk outside the door.
Right.
Kids couldn't play, dope dealing, prostitution, everything was going on. So now, the very people that were successful in making sure that we had a nice, pleasant neighborhood, you're kicking them out. We don't understand this, but they didn't yield to the citizens. They went ahead on and took all of those contracts back. And when I looked at that
they were making a lot of money from them contracts, too.
Yeah, they were, but they were successful in making sure that the neighborhood was
enough. They were successful. What I like about the Nation of Islam, business-wise, they know the rules. They go by the book, and they're up on it.
Yeah, and that shows you how the Jews feel about black neighborhoods, because it didn't have anything to do with being anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was, what the hell? I mean, everybody wants blacks to be law-abiding citizens. And you have somebody that was aiding the police, which the police couldn't stop it or wouldn't stop it.
Right.
And the thing is, that was their major complaint. And the Congress and the Senate went along with it, which shows me that, hey, look, you know what? They don't want peace in the black neighborhood, and they don't want blacks that be in control of their neighborhoods, just like that movie was showing you.
Right.
You know, it's a direct reference to blacks taking control of their neighborhood. That's what that movie was all about. That's why it was so interesting to see how they characterized everything.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see, Breezy. We got another hand up. Good people, if you haven't seen it, check out Black Gestapo. 425, your mic is open. 425. Going once. Well, I'll leave the mic open until they come back. Because they're out on the West Coast. Now, how did you run across that film, Beasley?
I used to sell that movie when I was...
Okay.
I used to sell blaxploitation movies, gospel videos, gospel CDs, black history books, black religious books, the whole works. And I used to have them in my stores. You know, when you come in to get the food, you know, with the Nation of Islam papers there. And I used to carry the Afro back in the day, and the Chicago Defender and all of those papers, along with, you know, the snacks and everything else. So what happened is when somebody come in, you know, if a while they was, you know, picking up some canned goods or something, they might see a video, at that time VHS tape, that they wanted, you know. And that was part of my inventory.
Well, now, you got any other movies you might recommend?
Well, this same guy, Rod Perry, the one that was the leader of the Black Security Force that was talking about Do For Self.
Right.
He had another movie where he ran some white drug dealers out of the and black drug dealers out of the neighborhood. It was called The Black Godfather. His whole theme when he was producing these movies was to go in and show how black folks could rid themselves of criminal activity in their neighborhoods. But it's called The Black Godfather. I believe you can get that on YouTube also.
Right, The Black Godfather. Okay.
Yeah. But brother LA, I bet you, well, the thing is, I sent you where the Jewish community in Brooklyn has a security force. And they respond to lawlessness in their neighborhood. And the Muslims have the same thing. I sent you that link, too, to show you that they don't say anything about those people taking control of their neighborhood and stopping violence in their neighborhood. But I bet you, well, you know, the black Muslims do it too, but not to the effectiveness that they was doing it back with during the period that I'm telling you about.
Right.
But
I never know the NOI to proselytize either. You know, they whatever they're selling in there. I've run across them plenty of time, and I've never been. Nobody never tried to recruit me.
Well, when they were patrolling around my store and around the area where I was at, they never asked anybody to join.
Mm-mm.
But that was the way that the Jews could go in and get them out of the security business.
Right.
At that time, you know. All you got to do is just say you're anti-Semite, and every white person in a authoritative position is going to go in and say, well, hey, we can't have this. But
and
it will
your school was up in Baltimore. In Baltimore, I don't know how it is now, but back in the, I know, 80s for sure, when I was in and out of that town, they had a pretty good, they were definitely all up in the black neighborhoods, black liquor store, mom and pop Jewish folk, pawn shops, which is essentially in certain neighborhoods, that was the black man's bank. And then they had quite a bit of real estate holdings in that town, too.
They still do.
They still do. I guess people are looking at, you know, they with those government contracts they got, which were, because they were making millions of dollars off of that.
They were.
So I guess some people just didn't like the idea of them making that kind of money. And they provided a good service.
Exactly. So on two fronts, that's a no-no when it comes to black people. Number one, you're not supposed to make any money, especially if it's coming from the government. And number two, hey, look, we want violence in your neighborhood. You know, the thing is, I'm quite sure you got some naysayers out there saying, no, they don't. But the thing is, if that was working, and look, they got rid of Cisneros because Henry Cisneros was defending this thing. He said, well, look, before these guys got in here, you couldn't, they were out of, these projects were out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, look, we're going to get you out of here. And they find out he had an extramarital affair, and he hasn't been in government since. So,
right, I haven't heard from him since.
That's right. So with that being the case, Brother L.A., you can see the handwriting on the wall. Now, whether you want to believe it or not, I mean,
they sent him back to San Antonio.
That's right. That's right. And if black folks want any type of security in their neighborhood, they're going to have to bankroll it themselves, in which they should. And if they're effective in it, some kind of way the authorities are going to find a way to make sure they get them out of there, because the Black Panthers were very successful in doing this too. And the thing is, they didn't want government money. The way they did it was they did it by going ahead on in the neighborhood, and the people was bankrolling their operation.
Right.
But you see what
happened?
They
also had a newspaper too, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yeah. Did you ever read it?
Not the Panthers paper, but the Final Call. I've read that. You know, whenever I come across one,
mm-hmm.
I read it. I never subscribe, but whenever I come across one, I'll read.
There's a lady here in North Carolina has every issue of it.
Mm-hmm.
And those articles.
Doesn't that come out weekly?
Yeah, just like the Final Call.
Right, okay.
And it was a very beautifully structured rag. I mean, the thing is, it was very informative, and it was done very professionally. But this lady has every copy of it. She saved them. And the thing is, they're in very good shape. I don't know where she is now. What happened to those papers? Because she was up in age when I saw her.
In order to preserve those, you gotta have a special place, temperature controlled.
Yeah.
And whatnot. But hey, hold it, Rob. I think Robin's come back. Hold on, Beasley. 425. Your mic is open.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi,
Hi
can
Robin.
You hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Hi. When I was with the Holes in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Dania Beach, Florida, we would go out in the community evangelizing, and we also attended political town halls, and we volunteered on some community safety boards as well. And when we were out evangelizing in the neighborhood, we came upon a mom and pop neighborhood store, and out front they were having a big barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And the drug dealers communicated and partnered with that business owner there. And they said, hey, we'll go in and we'll have our people come to your store, and they'll buy all their cigarettes and their alcohol and their beer only from you. And you don't give us a hard time about our people out here conducting business, okay? And then they would do things like buy up $500 or $600 worth of meat from him, and then bring in a big barbecue grill and grill it, and then give the food away or sell it, right?
Mm.
To people in the community. So, and then on the flip side, at the town hall meetings and on the community safety board, we would ask them how they felt about the drug dealers in their neighborhood. Now, other neighborhoods in Dade County and stuff like that were overrun with violence and people getting shot and killed, but they didn't have a big violence problem here. And so when we asked them how they felt about that, they said, well, we don't call the police. We don't need to because we work together and we provide our own security. We know where our kids are at, and we give our kids things to do. Okay?
Okay.
So that they stay out of trouble. So you have to give them options, take control of the situation, okay? You don't have to be at the mercy, oh, there's nothing available, but we can provide our own security forces. And you might not want to accept drugs in your neighborhood, but these guys, these drug dealers, and even the Black Panthers, they did the same thing. They went in and they took their drug money and they built playgrounds and after school programs and you know, school back to school drives and stuff like that. You understand? And so,
okay.
You know, they. You have to look at their heart, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So, but, you know, we don't have to be at the mercy of the government. We don't have to be at the mercy of, oh, there's nothing available for them to do. We don't have to be at the mercy of that everybody thinks that, oh, we're Black, we're just thugs, or whatever. So, and last thing. What's the name of that movie that you guys were discussing with the security?
Black
Corps?
Gestapo.
Black Gestapo, okay.
It's on YouTube. About an hour and a half long.
Yeah, I'm gonna
see what caught my attention is, you know, was, I don't wanna give it away. But watch it'll get your attention. But it's free on YouTube.
Okay.
And I think the Black Godfather's free on YouTube also.
Okay. I'll check that out over the weekend. All right, let me ask you this, because we're talking about this was during the Black exploitation era. What
right.
was your take on two movies? The original Superfly movie with Ron O'Neill and the Mac with Max Julian and Richard Pryor. What are your take on those two films?
Well, Brother F, well, you know, like I said before, you're young enough that really you didn't see a lot of stuff going on in the neighborhood. It hadn't really reached its zenith point. But
right.
what happened is, if you look at that whole era, think now, Black folks was on the march. Now, I think Martin Luther King got killed in, what, 68,
69?
68,
yeah,
68. Malcolm X got killed in 65.
Okay.
The Black Panther Party, they had really started tightening the screws on them. But the Nation of Islam was very effective with that do-for-self message. And this whole integration thing really had lost favor with Black people. And, you know, the Watts riots and all of that stuff was going on. In fact, I don't know if you really believe what I'm saying here, you think it's just crazy stuff, crazy talk. When Martin Luther King got killed, every city was on fire. in the United States?
My mother, I was in third grade. I remember, my mother, who was a nurse at Freedman's Hospital, campus of Howard University at the time, now it's Howard University Hospital, she pulled me out of school, and she didn't allow me to go back to school until after King was entombed.
Yeah.
And we had everybody in the neighborhood had Soul Brother on their car and on their in their windows. That way, no rioting came to our particular neighborhood, but if you know anything about D.C., which you do, the 14th Street corridor, 8th Street Northeast, they tore all that up. Which
yeah.
were black
yeah.
neighborhoods. They were black neighborhoods.
Yeah. But blacks didn't own a lot of that stuff in those neighborhoods. They were renters. And the businesses were Jewish, white Jewish
yeah,
folks.
Jewish,
so,
Jewish businesses, yeah.
Yeah. So, Brother L.A., I was drafted in 69. I think I told you that.
Mm-hmm.
Every neighborhood was on fire. Black folks knew who the oppressors were, and they were united in that. If you notice, segregation more or less had a hard line between whites and blacks at that time. And the integrationist movement had almost fizzled out. And I'm going to give you this. When Martin Luther King went to Chicago during that demonstration, he said, hey, the northern part was more dangerous than the southern part. But at that time, he got a chance to speak to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He had a meeting with him. And it's documented. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told him about this self-movement thing and got him to realize, hey, wait a minute. You're going in the wrong direction. Yeah, you're going to integrate, but if you don't own nothing, integration is just going to further keep your people under oppression. That was the secret meeting. But if you notice his last march, that what was it, his last march in Memphis, if you notice the part in that speech, he was going towards self-help and do for self after that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what took him out. They tell you that the speech that he did at Riverside Church about Vietnam was what got him killed. But what got him killed was he was leaning more towards do for self and going ahead on and putting up businesses and everything. If you listen to that last speech, you say, hey, he sounds just like Malcolm X. Well, they had to do something to break this unity that was in the black neighborhoods at the time.
Uh-huh.
Because everybody knew, hey, wait a minute, white is responsible for all of this stuff. And then you had the Black Panthers going and teaching those children, hey, look, you have to have pride in yourself, and they started feeding those people or those young kids before they went to school.
Yep.
Nation of Islam had those Muhammad universities teaching kids about their blackness.
Right.
Well, Herbert Hoover.
Yeah,
the FBI said, you know what, the Black Panthers is the most dangerous black organization in the United States because they were capturing the mind of those kids at a young age. So what happened was that COINTELPRO had started to work, counterintelligence program, against what they call radical black groups. But in order to make this thing work, they did to black folks just what they did to Indians and what England did to China with the opium. I'll never forget, I was on a red eye, and a guy had a briefcase, and we were talking, and he had a handcuff. He was handcuffed to that briefcase,
mm-hmm.
but he was able to get into it, and he showed me where Air America at that time was transporting drugs to the base, Long Binh, Saigon, and also out there by Cameron Bay, and they were flying drugs into, CIA was flying drugs into the black neighborhood. Well, say again?
The CIA, yes.
That's right. They was bringing it from the Golden Triangle into the bases and putting them on those transport planes. And you know, Ike Atkinson got busted for this. But what happened?
Yeah, I saw a documentary about him, and Frank Lucas, the late Frank Lucas, with Denzel Washington portrayed him in the movie American Gangster.
Yes. But
in an interview, it's on YouTube. He says he got drugged straight that way. He said he did it one time, but and then the TV show on FX right now, Snowfall, is about the CIA.
Right. Well, what happened is, but what happened, Brother L.A., they had to do something to break this new frame of thought in black neighborhoods. And what they did was, in order to make sure that this drug thing could work, they promoted drugs and violence and gang activity through these black exploitation movies. That ushered in the drug craze. If you know the Superfly, you know he was dressed all nice, had the gold chains and the women and everything. And the same thing about
Mac. And same with the Mac. The same.
That's right.
And they also glamorized being in prison with the wearing your jeans hanging off your butt and stuff.
Mm-hmm. But Robin, do you remember Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch?
Yes.
You know, I remember. I never saw them perform, but because Mark, he later on became an actor, which he is now. But
that's
I remember
right.
that. But yeah, I remember him.
But he and Calvin Klein was going in the underwear business, and he couldn't figure out how to promote his brand of underwear. So he had Marky Mark, which was Wahlberg, Donnie Wahlberg,
I think. Wahlberg, yeah.
When I went to New York, he had posters all around in Brooklyn and all those places with Donnie, with his pants below his waist where you could see his underwear, and it had Calvin Klein on the waistband, and Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, that was Donnie Wahlberg's rap group, and his thing was go in and have his pants halfway his butt. And he glamorized this, and LL Cool J picked it up, and the rest of the black rappers picked it up. And that's where this wearing your pants halfway your behind came in. Calvin Klein started that, but they blamed it on the prisoners in prison. But the thing is, the guy that glamorized it was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. If you go and look at his videos, you'll see where he dropped his pants.
Yeah, you're correct. Marky Mark, they glamorized it, and then when they glamorized it, they separated people from the truth so that now when our black youth wear these pants below their butt, they're not understanding what that indicates. Okay?
Exactly.
They don't know the history.
No, they don't know the history because you're blaming it on the prisoners, but it wasn't the prisoners, because when you went to New York, you saw him all over the place with his pants halfway his butt where you could see the Calvin Klein name on that brand of underwear. And the thing is, the guy that was pointing it towards the prisoners was our favorite man. Jesse Jackson was the one that said it was the prisoners that promoted this. But hell, you don't see prisoners in jail wearing their pants halfway to butt. It was the Calvin Klein deal with Marky Mark, and then the black rappers picked it up. LL Cool J was famous for it. And once they found out girls was hollering and screaming, everybody started doing it. And the kids picked it up. But getting back to this other thing, this drug thing, Brother L.A., if you look at it, the way white power structure has been able to control people through drugs. And the thing is, you can look at the China opium wars. You can look at the Indians with the liquor. And the same formula worked with us with the drugs. And in order to make the drugs glamorous and gangland activity, those blaxploitation movies was the way they did it.
Drugs, all drugs, illicit and legal. Well, I don't consider pharmaceutical drugs all legal, honestly. Okay? I think that they're just as dangerous. And in fact, all of the illegal drugs all started off as prescriptions, even LSD.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the CIA was behind that.
Thank you.
Yeah, what was his name? Professor O'Leary? Somebody.
Oh, Timothy Leary.
Yeah, Timothy Leary, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but Brother L.A., all you got to do is follow the money and look at all of those chain of events that went on at that time. And at that time, the blacks was united in their struggle. For whether it was integration or whether it was doing for, they didn't want do for self to come in there. They did everything. They did everything to separate that do for self message from the integrationist. And because you know the one theme that they use, they say you can't listen to those black Muslims because they don't believe in Jesus Christ being
yep,
the Son of.
Yeah, that's how a lot of black pastors got bad mouth in that way.
That's right. And what happened is if you read the Quran, you can't be a true Muslim if you don't read the Bible and you don't believe that Jesus was a prophet of God. There's no difference between a prophet of God and a son of God. But that was the trick that they used to get, you know, the black pastors, Christian pastors on their side. But if you look at that whole era and you look at it deeply, you'll see that all of these things was transpiring at the same time to try and get the black community to where it is today.
You know, now correct me if I'm wrong, but those black pastors during the civil rights era, I never heard of them doing any talking about do for self.
Well, the thing is, if you look at
I'm talking about that whole Atlanta mafia, King, Abernathy, Young, all of them. I never heard King talk about. Now I'm not going to talk about his last speech now, but I'm talking about prior to that.
Well, do you know what? What's the guy Lewis? That's his name, Representative Lewis.
Farrakhan.
No, Lewis, the guy that died down there in Atlanta at the Atlanta Congress.
Oh, John Lewis.
John Lewis, do you know what his chief job was during that time?
No.
Was to set up credit unions in the black neighborhood.
Didn't know that.
Well, you know, and look, they had schools, and look, they also, what's her name, Fannie Lou Hamer was the one they were setting up co-ops. But what happened is after the movement got co-opted, then they started talking about integrating this lunch counters and all of this stuff. But I'll send it to you. But the thing is, John Lewis's job was to go in and set up co-ops, economic co-ops, and to set up credit unions. And the lady that was really responsible for it is SNCC. I can't think of her name, but she was just as aggressive as Fannie Lou Hamer was. But she had a falling out with King in the Atlanta Mafia, as you call it, because her whole thing was about doing for self, too. But once they got co-opted by their white benefactors, that's when the whole movement changed to where, you know, we got to integrate and everything. But that wasn't the way that movement first started, if you read it and you read the history of it.
There was a black woman that was behind the scenes in the civil rights era. What was her name? Ella Baker.
Ella Baker. That was her. If you look at what she was,
yeah,
if
Ella
you look
Baker,
at what,
she, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, go ahead.
No, Ella Baker was a powerful force. She just kept a super low profile.
But her whole thing was economics,
right?
And they kicked her out. You know. If you read it, they kicked her out because they were into this integration thing. And integration really was all about finding out and trying to get into the black community, because those segregated communities was mostly self-contained at that time, if you look at it.
We got to do a podcast on that. Let me read a little bit about Ella Baker. Ella, when people go online, just go to put in Ella Baker in any search engine. Ella Josephine Baker, December 13th, 1903 to December 13th, 1986. Boy, that's weird. Was an African-American civil rights and human rights activist. She was largely behind-the-scenes organizer whose career spanned more than 50 years in New York City and in the South. She worked alongside some of the most noted civil rights leaders of the 20th century, including W.E.B. Du Bois, Thurgood Marshall, A. Philip Randolph, and Martin Luther King, Jr. She also mentored many emerging activists such as Diane Nash, Stokely Carmichael, Bob Moses, as well as leaders in the SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. She probably had more power than King, but the thing is, she was a woman, and she kept, the little bit I know about her, she kept in the background to, a lot of people didn't even know she was married within the movement.
No.
But she kept
low
profile.
But they kept her in the profile background because she was a woman. But do you see the part that she was doing co-ops?
Baker, can see. Let me get into what she was doing. Early activism. She was doing that, huh?
Yes.
Yep. I just ran across it. She founded Baker Workery, founded the Young Negroes Cooperative League. Damn, I didn't even know about that.
Yeah. But the whole thing was to get that money out of the black neighborhood, and the way they got it out was integration. Because once we found out we could go and spend money in those white neighborhoods, we ran to it like a fly does honey.
Mm.
In fact, if you read the Baton Rouge bus boycott, they didn't march like today. They did an economic boycott, and they bought that bus company. In fact, you did a program on it. They bought that city to its knees. And the thing is, Reverend Jameson, he was a sellout. Instead of him going ahead on and negotiating for jobs and negotiating and stirring those people to do for self, he stirred them into going back on that bus. But that's another story. But anyway, but those black exploitation movements was put out and produced to go ahead and make sure that they glamorized the dope scene, and the rest is history. You see, we're on our knees now. Our neighborhoods are flooded with drugs, and you can't get anything done you can't get anything done positively.
Boy, there's a lot of hit. Yes. Well, I'm going to have to do some podcasts on because just from Ella Baker alone, you're right. The Negro Cooperative League.
Yeah, and Fannie Lou Hamer was set up a co-op, but it was done through the SCLC. They had, before they got co-opted,
mm-hmm.
They were about doing for self too, but not to the extent that they didn't have the knowledge like the Nation of Islam had. And plus, once the sellouts got in there and started steering them in a different direction, you know, I mean, everything was to integrate black white establishments.
People, if you don't know about Ella Baker, look her up. Ella Josephine Baker. I would say, now this is just me in L.A.'s thinking, she probably had more impact. Martin Luther King was more prominent and well-known, but she laid a lot of groundwork for what he could do, as well as others. That's my take on it. Any other comments on Black Gestapo, Beasley?
No.
Okay. Well, keep on recommending those movies because now I'm looking at the exploitation movies in a whole different light. But Superfly, the original Superfly with Ron O'Neill, the character of Youngblood Priest, his heart, he wanted to get out of the drug game. But the white police officer in one of those scenes didn't want him to get out of the game. Because he was the main, well, I don't want to give it away for people who haven't seen Superfly. And I haven't seen the Mac. And so, Robin, have you ever seen the movie The Mac?
No, not yet.
Which, you know what, The Mac was bankrolled by drug dealers. I don't know if that's an urban myth.
Yeah, by pimps.
Yeah, the Ward brothers pimps out of Oakland, California.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, but well, Brother Beatles, you would I would call you the hookup man back in the day. I know when a movie American Gangster was released with Denzel Washington, you know, you hear I was somewhere like a Kinko somewhere in College Park, Maryland, and they were just talking it up. I said, man,
yeah.
I got to go to the hookup man. And I got a copy of the movie from what I call the hookup man. Before the movie was actually released, but now in the digital age, I don't know if the hookup man can do that anymore because of, you know, technology
is changing. They can do it better because everything is online now. If you know how to go in and get on to these movie distribution corporations, you can get it. There were some white boys at the flea market there in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Before those movies ever hit the street, they already had the original.
Mm.
They had a way that they could go in there and get it. I don't know how they got it, but that was the thing.
Yeah,
you
the
see
hookup
all the
man. I haven't visited the hookup man in a while, but
yeah. Well, all of my stuff came from the factory. Come from the movie distribution company. You know.
Yeah, because one movie I saw, that was in Detroit. And, man, you can tell it was a bootleg movie. Because some bootleg movies, they don't look like they're bootleg. But you saw people getting up and going. This guy took a camcorder in there. This is back, when did I see that? This was back in the mid-90s. But,
You know what?
The hookup guy that you would see at a flea market, those guys were all right, though.
Yeah.
But
they
the last one I saw, I couldn't wait for American Gangster. I said, man, let me go to the hookup, man, and buy something. Let's see. We got another caller here. 602, area code, your mic is open. 602. Okay.
Okay, mic check, 1, 2, can you hear me?
Yeah, now you're there.
Good morning, Miss L.A., good morning, rest of the world, ladies and the audience. Man, this has been a great day. I'm loving the topic of discussion. Y'all really dropping some real knowledge. I was just like, wow. Today was the day that I sat back and listened.
He's making me look at black exploitation films in a whole different light.
Me too, and I felt it. Because, I mean, I got plenty of black exploitation films I can run down now, but this is not the place, time, no platform. But at the same instance, I'm saying y'all really get into the meat of it. And I'm thankful I'm here. I'm not even texting anybody today. I wanted to be an avid listener, you know. But I really appreciate you, L.A. You do a lot for the community. And a lot of people don't give you your flowers. I'm giving your flowers live on your show. Letting everybody know this is where you need to be. It's my house radio. I'm Pastor Don Jr., CEO. I'm out.
All right. Thank you, Pastor Don. Let's see. Now, once again, before I go to the next caller, if you don't know about her, and I'm going to cover her next week, one of those days next week, Ella Baker, Ella Josephine Baker, she really, now this, you know what? If anybody deserves a statue on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., it's her, in my opinion. What do you think, Beasley?
You know, when you said that about the honorable Elijah Muhammad, I said, you know,
he deserves to be there, in my opinion, before King.
No.
That's just my opinion.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody had their different input. You keep them all there. You just add on. You know, King, in his own way, changed things. The honorable Elijah Muhammad did, Ella Baker did, and there's a whole lot of others. But the thing is, you don't take anything away. You just add on, because everybody made a contribution. Fannie Lou Hamer, Ella Baker. I mean, you can go on and on. I do have some problems with the way King started, but I know who changed his direction and his focus. If you read about Bayard Rustin, that was the guy that changed the course of where King was going when he first got started. And that's another story, but anyway.
What did you say, Bayard Rustin?
Yeah.
All right, that's the first time I heard of him, okay.
Oh, he was a mover behind the scenes, trust me.
All right, that's one of my homework assignments for today. Thank you, Beasley, for that analogy you're kicking out. Area code 314, your mic is open.
L.A.
Yes, sir.
What's the name of that movie?
Black Gestapo.
Oh, my goodness, man. No wonder you're not getting these tiny hall bills. You wasting your time listening to mess like that. I mean, just think about the name of the title, Gestapo. You know what the Gestapo really originally was?
I know from over in Germany. I'm familiar.
Yeah. Well, of course, there are black Germans. And all this stuff about integration destroyed this and integrated. You know what it sounds like? It sounds like that you got a group of people, small in numbers, that want the federal government to make black folks shop with black folks. What's your likelihood of that ever happening? And what would be the constitutionality of it? Would it be wrong or would it be right? I mean, it sounds like something that comes out of the left, the progressives, to make people act in a certain way. Tell you what you got to eat, tofu and kale. Tell you what you got to drink, alkaline water.
Well, when
and, you
it
know,
comes
you're talking
to,
about,
to a la Claude Anderson, you're not going to get, well, I think we can all agree, you're not going to get black, well, any group of people to shop. Then again, you might. Let me give an example. There's no shortages of black folk that will go to a Chinese food restaurant or carryout. I got me some shrimp fried rice in the refrigerator right now that I bought from the Korean people around the corner. However, when was the last, all right, this is just me. I'm just one person. But anybody, have you ever seen a Korean in a soul food restaurant? I've never seen it, but I'm just one person.
I don't go to a damn soul food restaurant, so I have to say no.
Okay.
Well, let me give you this. Have you ever seen a Mexican
in
a
taco? Wait a minute. If I don't want to be talking, I'm going to have to move. Somebody's got to be muted.
Hold on, Beasley. We're going to come back to you. Go ahead, Pionk. You got the floor.
I'm talking all day.
You got the floor, Pionky.
Who are the biggest drug dealers in this country? They were black. What about the CIA? Where's the records of that? That there is a hypothesis. A conspiracy. Maxine Waters brought that up. Where is this stuff going on then?
Hold it. The question you asked was, who are the biggest drug dealers in the USA?
It was black. Look, they was all black. You must have had about two dozen kingpins in Kings in Detroit. Matter of fact, I sent you some movies on that. You must have had about two dozen. Wait a minute, Pianki.
With I would disagree that the biggest drug dealers in the United States. Now they might be the more
illegal drug dealers
drug
that's gonna be selling to the hood. The one that's gonna be selling to the hood.
All the drug dealers and all the drug black exploitation movies and whatever, or the ones that we read in the paper in real life, none of them are manufacturing drugs or no do they. That's where the real money is. And manufacturing drugs and then growing, like marijuana, growing the plants or whatever, pre what's ever going on right now. That's where
the
real money is. We don't have anybody. We've never had anybody. We've never had a manufacturer busted. Not one.
Here's the thing. We're talking about illegal, illicit, and you're talking about legal enterprise. There's nothing keeping blacks from getting into legal enterprise or making drugs. Matter of fact, I know some that's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sent you emails of one manufacturer. Matter of fact, he's expanding. He tried to get me to come back to St. Louis to help lay out his spot. His name is Alvin Morrill. Then where he was in Maryland Heights, it was another black merchant that was manufacturing in the same facility in Maryland Heights off of Schultz Road. So, no, we're talking about illegal. The biggest illegal distributors and sellers of drugs in this country, in the hood, were black folks. It was black. It wasn't no CIA. It was Negroes. And Detroit must have had at least two dozen, quote-unquote, drug kingpins.
All right. Now, Detroit is one city. Okay. What about the opioid thing that's going on right now, including fentanyl? You had a lot. Matter of fact, when I was up in Rutland, Vermont, when was the last time I was up there? About five, six years ago. I was up in Rutland, Vermont, and basically Vermont is lily white. And the problem that they had up there is opioid addiction. So if you talk about Detroit's in Michigan, but once you step out of Detroit, you know, places like Flint, Bay City, the UP of Michigan. Michigan is basically a white state that just happens to have one black city.
Well, it's the same way when people say the most violent cities are in red states, but those cities are blue, quote unquote, black. Would you agree?
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right about that.
Name some red states and then let's name the crime areas where they concentrate. Louisiana, a red state. High crime, New Orleans, Baton
Rouge. New Orleans.
I mean, Mississippi, a red state. High crime,
Jackson.
High crime, Jackson. I mean, we can go on and on and on. There's something peculiar about this group. Not all. There's something peculiar. And the association. I mean, you have to be truthful with it. Superfly was a private endeavor. $75,000 it cost to make that movie. It wasn't no Days. Who is these Days? And they can't nobody name them. You want to make a good movie?
Repeat that again. Now with Superfly.
Huh?
No, repeat what
Superfly
you said about Superfly.
Cost $75,000.
Yeah,
Superfly
it was very inexpensive movie to make.
Grand.
Yeah, it was very inexpensive to make. Most of the people that were in that movie were not actors.
Absolutely. It wasn't no Days. And it was a portrayal of what was going on, am I right?
Yeah. Art is a reflection of life.
Absolutely.
And back then, I was young, but I was in I was just getting in high school back then, but I do remember occasionally seeing a pimp mobile, which is what people like Superfly and the Mac were driving around town.
Hell, I had one. I had five brand new cars that year, one of which was a LD, El Dorado.
Yeah, that would be a class. But did you have it pimped out like a pimp mobile, though, Pianco?
I had the coat and everything. It had pearl steam furs to make my coat and everything else.
Did you have a TV in your car and a phone?
I didn't have no TV in the car. I had phones. I always had phones.
Okay, yeah, now you, man,
that
was very rare back then.
A brand new Thunderbird that was popping. Corvette, $7,500 for a brand new Corvette that was made there on Union and Natural Bridge at the Shepherd plant, at the Corvette plant.
All right, let's go back to the drug thing. Now, if we take the state of Missouri, I don't know the. You would probably say the most black drug dealers are probably in St. Louis. I don't know if the city's going through gentrification.
St.
Louis
and Kansas City.
But the rest of the state, well, you might have an opioid crisis. I don't know if it is in Missouri because I don't live there.
Now, let me ask you a question.
But more than likely, it's going to be white folks.
Let me ask you a question, Ellie. Now, you're doing the same thing some of these other folks do. You try to spread the evil amongst whites. Then you say blacks was united.
Well, no,
blacks
but nobody has exclusive rights on it, though.
Well, we want to always – why are you bringing in what other – well, let's say what Indians are doing. Let's say what Nigerians are doing.
All right. Every community's got problems. Every community, drugs is an issue.
Well, whose responsibility is it to straighten out that community? The people in
it all starts with the individual.
You talking about what's going on in white communities. So white supposed to come straighten out your black community?
No. I don't. It starts with the individual, and when it comes to on an individual basis, regardless of your race, color, sex, or whatever,
So when we're talking about the drugs in the black community, why are we going and talking about the drugs? I don't know about no drugs in no white community. Do you? Which do you have more relevance with? I mean, come on, let's be real with this. And it ain't no such and such community. It's neighborhoods.
Oh, God.
That's just the way it happens to be. And you talk about King. When King came to St. Louis, the preachers ran him out. They didn't want him.
Now, why was that, Pianchi?
Why was it? They didn't want to hear what he was talking about. Reverend Packnett and some of those others at the time, I can't even name them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talking about going back. So they ran him out. They didn't want him in St. Louis. Talking about all cities burning. St. Louis didn't burn. It was a major city.
They didn't have riots in St. Louis in 68?
No, they didn't have no riots. The biggest riot they had was at Stonehen High School when kids wanted to leave, go home early. So people be talking this stuff, making it seem so dramatic. I mean, you have you sitting on the edge of your chair, going in your pockets, getting ready to come out with that $20 bill to pay to the speaker who done gave that lecture, hyping things up, lying. Black first, this, that, and the other. But that's all right. I mean, that's enterprise. People do those things. People make money like that. That's okay. This is not illegal.
No, it's a free enterprise system.
Not illegal to look.
Going back to this, and drugs affect any community. What's the I don't know, and I haven't read anything since we've
been on the air. Have you ever used any drugs? I haven't.
Prescription, yeah. Over the counter. I haven't taken a prescription drug in over 20 years.
Have you ever used any illegal drugs that they sold?
No.
Do you know what they even look like?
I've seen some stuff now. But
well,
I
have.
Staying in control of my surroundings, aware of my surroundings.
You might tell me about it. I have. Have you had many moving violations in your automobile?
I probably had two or three.
I've only had one back in the 70s.
You know, two or three. But
I can't. And you know this stuff about groups patrolling their own neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
Well, come on now. If you have a group of people, blacks, controlling their own name, the most they're going to do is call the white police. Do you think that's possible?
Depends on what city you live in.
It don't matter what city you're in. Who's going to carry the liability? Do these people that's out patrolling their own neighborhood, do they have what's called qualified immunity from the state? So when they detain somebody and grab them by the arm, and that person say, "Oh, you sprung my arm," so
well,
who's going to be responsible for the liability? L.A. Do all the homeowners in that community?
What was that case in? What was that case earlier this year? The conclusion of it, the Ahmaud Arbery case, with father and son. Attempted a de facto citizen's arrest that went wrong.
Yeah, they did go wrong. They should have kept an eye on him.
Yeah, that's all. Should have kept an eye on him.
Did you see the video of him?
Call the police.
Did you see the videos of him leading up to? You see the videos of him leading up to those points, cursing out the police, charging at the police.
Wait a minute now. You talking about Ahmaud Arbery himself?
Yes.
Well,
those two
weren't the police.
We're talking about King's, Martin Luther King's cliche, character.
No, I didn't.
You mean the incident with the 65-inch colored TV, flat screen TV? I sent you that. You seen that. Of course, no, those are two men. Those two or three men shouldn't have done what they done. They should have just kept an eye on them, called the police. Let the police help.
Right. Well, we do agree on that. But, all right.
In a lot of those cases, if the courts had done what they were supposed to do and locked their butts up, Floyd wouldn't have been there to get killed that day. Deontay Wright wouldn't have been out on the street where he got killed. He would have been in jail. They let him go. That's their privilege. Think. And we can name several others.
True. Well,
the kid that went in and shot up, at the kid that went out to his... Went out and got his backpack and got a gun out and came in and shot four people. Well, he was fighting an 11-year-old. Is he in jail still? Or is he out on a $75,000 bond?
You talking about that one in Michigan?
In Texas.
I'm not familiar with that case.
If the one in Michigan had been in jail for the criminal activity he had done before that time, he wouldn't have been there to get killed. They let him go.
Right.
That's pretty much.
Well, we got to get Freeway Rick Ross on here. That's one of Warren Houston's friends. He'll give.
You know what old Malcolm X said? Much of what I say may sound mean, but it's the truth. Quoting him. But anyway. Enjoy your black Gestapo, and give us a movie
review. Well, we did that earlier on. We already, you know, I watched it last night.
You haven't seen the movie, though, have you?
Yeah, I saw the movie last night. It's
free. Oh, well, I ain't wasting.
For only those who want to watch it.
I'll tell you a good document to watch is 20,000 Mules.
20,000 Mules? All right, let me look it up.
You
ain't
heard about that
on YouTube?
Huh?
Uh-uh, no, hold on. I'm going to look for it right now. 20,000 Mules.
Yeah, that's a good documentary. It's sold out all over the country.
20,000 Mules. Hold on, I'm finding 20,000, not 20,000 miles, but 20,000 Mules. Film 2,000 Mules. Yeah, hold on, is it 20,000 Mules or 2,000 Mules?
I thought it was 20,000.
All right, I see 2,000 Mules documentary reviews the truth about what... D'Souza?
Yeah, that's it. That's 2,000?
Yeah, 2,000 Mules. 2,000 Mules.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay, well.
That's a good one.
I'm going to check that out. 20,000 Mules.
Yeah,
2,000 Mules. We're going to review that. Matter of fact, I like what this started here. All right, 2,000 Mules. Directed by Dinesh D'Souza, and I listen to his stuff every now and then. All right, 2,000 Mules, I will watch that this weekend.
I think it's 12:23. You got time to stay within the bounds of your spending and not go overtime. That way you can keep money in the neighborhood.
Okay. All right. Alleged movie about alleged ballot fraud. All right.
You know, it's funny how they use the word alleged when everything's right there on camera.
And speaking of alleged, well, does anybody have an update on Kevin Samuels? He's been burning up the internet since, from what I hear, yesterday afternoon.
I don't even know who Kevin Samuels is.
He's not self-proclaimed anyway. Rob, are you there, or anybody that knows, give me an update on Kevin Samuels. Okay, well, nobody is.
Well, anyway, as it goes, I'm going to get off from here. I don't want to
hold
your program because I know
I will check out 2,000 Mules. 407 area code. Your mic is open.
Okay, I've been listening to the conversation, and also I was on YouTube, and I didn't realize that John Batiste won 5 Grammys. Ooh, that just blessed my heart. I love that man and his music. So anyway, that's good news for me. I didn't know that happened. But Kevin Samuels is gone. He's left the planet. And
All right, is that for sure?
His family reported that he passed. So there's so much. You have to go on YouTube and just see. There's one called What Killed Kevin Samuels. Somebody got a Red Bull there, Viagra. Because evidently he was having sex with some woman before it happened. And something happened where he was on top or something. This is one story. So
that sounds like it could be an urban myth right there.
Because he had a heart attack. He had a heart attack. That's why she called 911. Some young woman he was with called 911. That's the lady.
That sounds
now,
like an urban myth.
Well, you're going to have to go to the YouTube or somewhere to get an early update. This was 1 hour ago. It's amazing how many people are angry or glad or celebrating his death.
Mostly women.
But what did he do? No, angry modern black women celebrate the death of Kent. Okay, that's one reaction. Was a real friend, somebody said. Anton Daniels. Why news of death? Kevin Sam brought fear on me. Kevin Sam's last live video before getting killed, he knew it. My health declining daily. Kevin Sam sacrificing black men and how what killed Sam Kevin Samuels? They got a Red Bull Viagra in the picture. Last Instagram 24 hours about warning signs about older women. I mean, the man definitely made an impact in his 56 years on planet Earth. That's pretty interesting. No shame on him. He did what he was here to do, and now he had a heart attack having too much energy with another woman. So, celebrate his life. We should celebrate his life on all the people, all the women he woke up, maybe.
Yeah, he's all over Twitter and YouTube and all through the night, you know, but they didn't know whether, you know, back and forth was, it was question marks what happened to him. So that's why I asked that question.
So I think we should celebrate his life. A very colorful man who irritated. I'd say he triggered a lot of women, but yet he tried to give them some wisdom and advice. So you can't shame him for that, I don't think. Anyway, that's the way. But he's gone.
He is gone.
But that's the latest. So they'll tune in later on. Might be some more reports on whether it was Red Bull or Viagra that killed them. Oh, boy.
Good Lord. Well, that'll be the
pill,
talk.
That little blue pill gets people in trouble.
Anyway, we'll see after the dust settles what really happened.
And we got to laugh about everything, in my opinion, because these people in the government and these liberals are acting, they're performing on the stage with Roe v. Wade and planting triggering material to divide us and cause people to get anxious and stressed again. So if you don't laugh, you might go the route of Kevin Samuels with serious stress. Heart attacks happen because people are stressed. Their body, their mind, all of it, it's all stress. So the way people are acting with this Roe v. Wade, they just create more stress. How many times do we have to debate Roe v. Wade and abortions and all that? Done with that. Just laugh at people and move on with your life. You got a purpose. You got an assignment. Do it. And don't look at these clowns in our government. Oh, my goodness. The performance.
They got all kinds of videos here. Why are so many people celebrating the death of Kevin Samuels? The more accurate way to say that is, why are so many black women celebrating the death of Kevin Samuels?
And you know, because he triggered them. He triggered them. He spoke words that made them get angry or upset or depressed or whatever. And that just shows how weak the women are and how strong he was. Because anybody who gets triggered from somebody else's words into anger, you have a problem. Not that person speaking the words. You have a problem getting triggered by somebody else's words. You need to work on you. So Kevin Samuels left a lot of women who need to work on themselves if they're angry now and glad he's dead. Oh, somebody else going to come along and trigger your ass again, so get ready. It's not over.
what do you have for Sunday evening?
I might have Jonathan Blount back on. I'm talking to Jonathan. Jonathan is the co-founder of Essence. And he was recently contacted by OWN, and I'm not supposed to even be revealing this because he said the producers don't want it out yet, but they contacted him from an interview I did last year with him on my Sunday Soul Purpose Healing, because they're doing some type of docudrama on Essence. This is OWN and the company. So I contacted him today, and he said he would like to. I asked him if he'd like to give us an update on his life, because he's had, I think, 3 heart attacks. Talk about heart attacks. This man has survived so far 3 heart attacks. And I know exactly what causes heart attacks just from getting to know Jonathan Blount, his successful career with Essence, and then the fall of that, and then just his childhood traumas that he hasn't healed from. And, I'm so thankful for people like this in my life who help me understand and appreciate the journey of each of us is so unique, so different. Experience is the best teacher. I heard, I don't know who it was, said they haven't done any drugs, they haven't done this or that. Experiences, I've done drugs, I've had affairs, I've done it all. I've traveled all over the world. I'm done with that chapter. I'm so grateful that I experienced all those things and I survived, because that just shows the grace of the universe over your life. When you have do all these risky behaviors and activities and you're still here healthy and strong and energetic as ever, that's grace. That's grace and purpose in your life. So, hey, I don't have no complaints about all the things I've experienced in life and how I'm much better off where I am today in my small house, not paying rent, with my grandchildren, all that.
Or mortgage
I'm
payment.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's enjoy the journey. Let's enjoy the
Beasley,
journey and laugh
thank
a little
you.
Bit.
Beasley, thank you for that. Feel free to make more film recommendations. Anybody listening. What did you think about Viola? I don't know if you finished watching it, but what did you think?
I couldn't finish it. My granddaughter came into my house right when they were cutting off this guy's testicles in the bathtub. And I thought, this is a sign I don't even need to be watching this nonsense. So it was just too much violence and just the energy of that movie. I don't want to go back and finish that movie because I'm sure what's going to happen after that. And I had to quickly turn it off. She's like, what are you watching? I said, nothing. Blood in the water. Nope, I'm done with this movie.
I watched it all the way through.
Well, good for you. That is not the kind of entertainment I want to even be putting in my sight.
Well, the way I looked at it was things like that really do happen. See, that's how I was looking at that movie. With movies, you know, Hollywood takes, you know, typically 25% dramatic license and all that. But a lot of things that you see in these movies actually did happen.
Did happen past. I hope we're not having that kind of activity going
Look, from the crime that we see, that we hear about on a weekly basis, from the George Floyds to what's happening in Ukraine, man is man. As simple as that.
Yeah, that's up.
And man looks out for his personal interests, including if it includes violence.
Right. And that's why, Robin, I had the pleasure of having Robin Lynn on my show this morning to show us how humility is important in the journey to come out of whatever challenges you've had in life. Humility helps, and not big egos, when you are challenged with life circumstances and trauma. So thank you, Robin Lynn, if she's listening. It was an awesome, awesome interview, 2 hours of Robin sharing her journey, which just blew my mind in so many ways, because she's just an awesome soul who has done so many things that would destroy some people or depress some people, but she's overcome it. So we can celebrate everyone's life and the journey that they've had, good, bad, ugly, whatever. It's just a story that they tell. Like my dad used to always say, everybody has a story. So when I wrote his book, he was like, oh, well, everybody has a story. He didn't think, he's in his humble way, oh, everybody has a story. He didn't think much of it, but I did. So hallelujah. We celebrate everybody's journey and not put Kevin Samuels down or anybody else, because they triggered a lot of people. All these poor black women who got wounded because Kevin Samuels threw some words at them. He didn't hit them or smack them or wasn't abusive physically to them. So why are you hating on Kevin Samuels now that he's gone? I don't know.
They'll be buzzing this weekend. Beasley, I'm going to let you have the last word for today on anything Black Gestapo, another movie to recommend, what?
Oh,
well,
please.
Look, I'm going to say this, and you have very little time. Oliver North was the biggest drug dealer on the planet, him and George Bush Sr.
Yep.
And look, it's documented. And here's the other thing. The book that everybody should read is called The Dark Alliance. It shows where the CIA was smuggling drugs into the United States. They supplied Highway Ricky Ross. with drugs to finance the Contra war down in, was it Honduras? So
Nicaragua.
When you hear people, Ricky Ross will tell you, Blandón was the connect between the CIA.
I saw those videos on YouTube, yeah.
Right. So now, when you hear black folk talk about these street drug dealers and these black drug kingpins, every last one of them had to get their source was a white connected drug smuggler.
Exactly. All the drug dealers, like, I'll take Washington, D.C. What was his dude name? Rayful Edmond. Rayful Edmond,
yeah.
he was just a distributor.
Exactly.
You know, the Warren brothers out of Oakland, California, that bankrolled the Mac movie, they were just distributors.
Right.
Those are the ones
who
get popped. But the ones who manufacture it, ply, they never get in trouble.
That's right. Are the suppliers that can bankroll and smuggle the drugs in, they have a government connection. So now,
right,
when you hear somebody talk like this gentleman just finished, it's documented. George Bush Sr. had those tenders to go out there to the oil rigs to drop off supplies to the rigs, and it's in the book called The Pale Horse. Those ships
A friend of mine read that book. I'm going to have him come on here and talk about that.
Right. And look, they were bringing drugs in from the bigger ships. So when you hear color folk talk that smack that the gentleman just finished talking, I bet you if you go to any street dealer and ask them where Columbia is, they probably couldn't find it on the damn map. The thing is, it's a government connection and a corporate connection. How do these people wash all of that money that comes from drug dealers? They have to go through banks.
Right.
These people, in fact, Dick Gregory said it, and I'm going to end on this with Samuels. Do you know what they say? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me. Words will literally kill me. And the thing is this. He came down hard on black women. If you look at any of his commentaries, he never insulted white women or other ethnic groups. I mean, he came down hard on black women. So black women, hated him. And the thing is, that's what gets us with our people. See, we're hard on one another, and we are very abusive to one another. But that's how he made his living. So when black women have a strong reaction to his death, that's just like me having a strong reaction to Senator Jesse Helms. The best thing that ever happened for black people was when Jesse Helms died. And when I get a chance to find his grave, I'm going to piss on it. Because he did everything he did to oppress black folk. So this thing about my boy, Samuels, yeah, he deserved everything he got, as far as I'm concerned. But that's just me. We
and
don't
a whole
protect
lot
our
of other
black
people. All
yeah.
right, we're going to
yeah.
end it up on that. Everyone have a good rest of the weekend. Thank you, Billy, for that film recommendation.